Welcome to Unity of Fairfax, a positive path for spiritual living and spiritual center for education, practice, and service in Northern Virginia. We hope you find inspiration in this week's message.
Here it is, week number 5 of our 5-week Unity Awakening series of Sunday talks in small groups based on the book, How Then Shall We Live? 4 Simple Questions That Reveal the Beauty and Meaning of Our Lives by Wayne Moeller. So if you've missed any part of this series, then please check our video archive on the website and you can get caught up to where we are today. So what we're looking at are these 4 questions. Who am I? What do I love? How shall I live knowing I will die? I'm taking checking out AV folks to see if I need to switch mics, which I might do. And what is my gift to the family of Earth? So last week, we took a look at the question, where is peace of mind, as a follow-up, a natural follow-up to the question, what do I love? And all the threats to our peace of mind, I believe, can be summed up in one word. Worry. And clearly, we've got plenty to worry about these days. Even the title of this talk is worrisome. How then shall I live with the end in mind? Well, I take words of comfort from the 16th century French philosopher Michel de Montaigne, who said, "My life has been full of terrible misfortunes, most of which never happened." And it's true, if you think about it, of all the really terrible and awful things that can happen to a person, the absolute vast majority of them don't happen and won't happen. But between our ears, yeah, in our minds, every day can be the apocalypse. Or Halloween. We've had a lot of Halloween this year, about 7 months as far as I can tell. Well, anyway, that's the real reason why I don't watch movies or play video games about an apocalyptic dystopian future, because I don't want to plant any more of those images in my mind and call it entertainment, and let alone pay for it on top of that. So please, let's move on. But while we are in a collective agitative state that feels kind of apocalyptic, let's bear in mind the true meaning of the word apocalypse, which is simply to reveal or uncover. And revealing and uncovering is not a bad thing, although it is somewhat of a process. You know, in the Bible, the book of Revelation is also called the Apocalypse of St. John. And it's perceived to be a horrifically frightening conclusion to Christianity's holy text. And within its pages, all manner of horrible things happen, graphic, horrible things. However, significantly, it ends with a revelation, a revealing and an uncovering of New Jerusalem, which is an image taken from the prophecy of the book of Ezekiel in the Hebrew Scriptures. But this New Jerusalem is a cosmic win after an epic battle to liberate Christ's consciousness from all the layers of error thought that have been piled up and covered it up. So it gets uncovered. But a talk about Revelation is a different talk for a different day. We'll get back to it. Though as human beings, we all go through periods of struggle in which the truth of who we are gets revealed and uncovered. You know, the truth of who we are is that we are all beautiful and amazing and wonderful, individualized incarnations of the divine. And this uncovering process is designed to clarify who we are not, or who we are not anymore. In 12-step programs of recovery, it comes after a searching and fearless moral inventory. And after that comes sobriety and serenity. For others, it comes after the big, awful thing that you live through. And I don't know anyone who hasn't lived through a big, awful thing, whether it's a disease or divorce or disaster. Or sometimes the not-so-obvious big, awful things, but every bit as important, these internal reorderings that happen throughout our lives, which are often more distressing than a big, awful thing, because you don't really know what's going on other than things are just changing. I mean, think about a time when there's been a movement of spirit within you, or you might say within your psyche, in which you realize my life just doesn't fit anymore. And that's kind of an awkward experience. Or when you realize that the structures you have built in your life no longer or actually never did reflect who you are or who you're becoming. Sometimes it's experienced as a sort of disorientation, or even we call it divine discontent, in which nothing is really wrong, but nothing's really right either. We've all gone through processes like that, and it's this revelation and revealing and uncovering of who we truly are. And sometimes that happens on the collective level as well. And I think we're going through a period of that in our country where we're recognizing who we are not and who we are and who we're becoming. And it's awkward and it's uncomfortable and it's scary. I want to share with you an experience I had of this collective transportation. Yeah, it was transportation related, that happened in 1995. Prior to ministry, I worked in the international container shipping industry. Yes, I was misemployed, but I did get a job in my field, which when I was an undergrad was international studies. So I was working in the international container industry, shipping industry, and in 1995, I was part of a three-man lead team from our company that was sent to Odessa in the Ukraine. And our task, simple as it was simply to privatize and westernize a formerly socialist business. And what was kind of ironic about that was that nobody in the company, as far as I know, was aware of the fact that as an undergraduate, я изучал русский язык. I studied the Russian language when I was an undergrad. So Odessa, even though it was in Ukraine, was an all-Russian-speaking city where few people spoke Ukrainian. That's an aside, and you can thank Joseph Stalin for that. Again, different talk for a different day. So anyway, Ukraine had recently become independent, was still reeling from the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, was experiencing hyperinflation. I'll try to figure that out on an expense report, along with bribing government officials. And we had to also contend with former Communist Party officials who still had held somewhat obstreperous positions of authority and really were not terribly happy about our presence. Well, needless to say, the people I met, the workers and the shopkeepers and everybody, were utterly terrified and amazingly optimistic about the future because the world that they knew had come to an end. And that will be about the most understated sentence of this entire message. And while I did not meet any member of the Biden family while I was in Ukraine, I did have the occasion to meet two Cherokee women from North Carolina who were invited there by the government as a part of a program to teach ethical behavior in the school system. You cannot make this stuff up. They were some part of a program. And what was really wonderful about these Cherokee women, they invited us to their apartment to have hamburgers. So, yay. So, how then shall we live with the end in mind? And that might be the end of collective societal structures, which have shaped and informed our lives. Or it might be the end of the self that we have defined ourselves to be. More succinctly, and key to this topic, Moeller addresses really the question, how shall we live knowing we will die? Well, that's a cheery topic. But really it is, if we allow it to be. So think about it. How much of our life energy is squandered? Squandered primarily by worry. That is, misuse of our faculty of imagination. Or how much of our life energy is squandered and wasted doing things that ultimately don't even matter? Or how much of our life energy is squandered or wasted in relationships that are absolutely unfulfilling, or in playing roles that don't allow our light to shine? I mean, does anybody ever really on their deathbed say things like, if only I had spent more time at work, or I'm so grateful I worried about things that never happened?
or keeping up with the Joneses was my greatest accomplishment.
Nobody says stuff like that. Moeller writes, and it's important for us to understand and grasp, a clear perception of our death forces us to consider our lives as something worth living, creative, and passionate. Life is impermanent, Thich Nhat Hanh says. It is precisely because of its impermanence that we value life so dearly. So why is it then that people fear death? You know, I remember this beautiful woman in my church in North Carolina named Gwen, who shared with me towards the end of her life, she had cancer, she shared with me, she goes, Russell, I'm not afraid to die. I just don't want to. Fair enough. Her words have always stuck with me. Gwen really did live life full out. She was active in the community, had wonderful friends, a beautiful partner. She was committed to her profession, working with the county social services department. You know, and I remember after her funeral, we all went back to the house to dive into the absolute tsunami of casseroles that had shown up. And while we were there, everybody's gathered around and the phone rang. And I think it was Martha, her partner, who picked up the phone. And the caller identified himself this way. Hello, this is Life Magazine calling for Gwen. When this was relayed to family and friends, the whole house erupted in celebration. And partly because it was almost like, yeah, yay, Gwen, life is eternal. And partly because in her life, her sideline, she worked as a clown. Her job was to make people laugh and smile. And this is a true story. I mean, once again, you can't make this stuff up. This is how life unfolds. So back to the question. Why do people fear death? The greatest reason, I think, isn't because they're afraid of going to hell. And fortunately for those of us in Unity of New Thought, we know it's a state of mind we've all been. We're choosing not to go back. I think the biggest reason why people fear death is because they haven't lived, haven't made the most of this wonderful opportunity to have life and have it abundantly. Gwen did, which is why she didn't want to lose it. It was just that good. But she wasn't afraid. So yes, we worry too much, we fear too much, we focus too much on things that will not bring beauty and meaning to our lives, to borrow from the title of the book. Moeller cites several stories in the text, and I can verify this having been there myself, of being with people who are at the end of their lives. And he makes this observation. With so little time left, there is none to waste. Suddenly, childhood trauma seems less compelling. Money seems useful for daily needs, but greed seems silly. I mean, what actually can you take with you? Unproductive relationships are let go. Intricate career maneuverings seem wasteful, even comical. For those close to death, it becomes instantly clear that everything they do in the remaining days is precious. Every conversation, every action, every choice is pregnant with meaning and value. Only those relationships that are fruitful and loving are kept. The rest are allowed to fall away. Every act is a sacrament. Every breath, a gift. Nothing is taken for granted. Nothing is wasted. So my question to you and to myself, for that matter, is what if we adopted that way of being now? Why wait till we know our transition is at hand when the truth is we never really know when it's going to come? Consider this. 230,000 Americans, roughly the population of all of Richmond, Virginia, has died from COVID-19 this year. And 1 year ago, this disease did not even exist.
I hope every single one of those individuals was intentional about living each moment full on and full out. I know I want to, and I encourage you to. Kind of reminds me of the saying my mom has told me on many occasions and told a lot of people. She goes, "We all have an expiration date stamped somewhere on our bodies in a spot we just can't see." So, that being the case, let's make today count. Live full out. So, how then shall we live with the end in mind? You and me and all of us, we have a choice. We can look at this upcoming event, because it's going to happen to all of us, with regrets for errors and mistakes and wasted opportunities and fears. Or we can make every moment count by living and loving and forgiving and caring and using our life energy on things that matter. We indeed are living in challenging and unprecedented times. But really, they don't have to be against us any more than the thought of our transition has to be against us. Both the news of the day and knowing that our physical lives will come to an end can propel us to express the truth of who we are, to uncover and reveal it, if we will only accept the invitation to do so. The scripture tells us, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And here's the truth. You were created for a life of beauty and meaning, free to express, reveal, uncover the magnificence that you are as an individualized expression of life. We can do this, and I think actually we are doing this, however skillfully or mindfully. So let's make our mission not just to survive, but to thrive. Because after all, we have 2020 wonderful on the horizon. I'm Reverend Russell Hyland, and I approved this message. Peace be with you, and namaste.
Thank you for tuning into Unity of Fairfax podcast. You're welcome to join us live in Oakton, Virginia, every Sunday at 9 and 11 a.m., or view our live stream services from our website at unityoffairfax.org. We appreciate your donations to support this podcast to make our message of positive, practical spirituality more accessible to all. See you next time.